Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld, host of Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is an author and another radio show host, Alan R. Warren, who hosts on NBC News Radio, the House of Mystery radio show, and is also the author of 12 true crime books. Hello. How are you doing, Alan?
I am doing good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for agreeing to do this. You're like a star. You know, you're not up and coming. You're like a vintage star. All right. So let me start with you host this show, House of Mystery Radio Show, and you've also written 12 true crime books. Which came first?
I guess working radio came first.
Uh-huh.
I was producing other people's shows for quite a while, and then I got into being a host myself.
Okay.
Then the writing.
Really? Because, you know, I guess the opposite. I guess that you were a writer who was looking at the mechanics and wanted to talk to other writers. And just, okay, interesting. Very interesting. I completely got that one wrong. That's okay. I get lost. No, that's okay. So take me through this House of Mystery radio show. How does that work? How do you find your people? How do you put together a show? Is there a certain chemistry recipe?
It's evolved over the years, but I've been producing for a long time, and I've met a lot of agents. I've talked to a lot of writers and mm-hmm. filmmakers and stuff like that for years. So a lot of them I've got to know. A lot of it, I get to just call people up I know or text them and get them on the show. And sometimes agents send me things, and then other times I'm out just hunting.
Right. Kind of like what I do, except you have more interesting people. Now, do you put together like a mix of people for any reason, or do you just kind of, is it haphazard, or is it like, you know, a genre? How do you find your little mix? Because you have more than one person at a time.
I go all over the place. Originally, we were just about mystery. So true crime mystery or history mystery or paranormal mystery, sort of like that.
Uh-huh.
And then we've ventured on to other types of writers and producers. So
I've noticed that. Good.
I don't really have a formula. When I'm out looking, I don't like there's certain types of people, and I will stalk people. and I don't mean that bad way. What I do is I'm out looking, and I see a big pile of writers, and I just see how they are in social media. I see how they are with people, and because we have such a diverse group, they have to be a pretty open, good person, and that makes me interested in them. If I get interested in them, then I think probably the listeners will too.
Sure. Very good. That's excellent. And so your true crime books, I love true crime books. Everybody is, you know, almost like a voyeur on them. There is a theme. You do a lot of serial killers. I would say that's an underlying theme that keeps going. And cults. And both of those are such visceral. I think everybody has this interest in how in the world can you be a serial killer? How in the world can you either be a leader of a cult or a follower of a cult? You've written books on Jim Jones, Charles Manson. I'm going to get this pronounced wrong. Shoko Asahara. Did I say that right?
Close.
close. That's okay. You know, you haven't written one on Donald J. Trump and his cult yet, but I'm waiting. You know, I'm joking. Go ahead.
I'll tell you right. You know, with the true crime books, it's not so much serial killer as it is the ripple effect. When something happens that's tragic, a murder, or even a cult in the way it goes, I don't really get into detail on the event. Most of my books will cover it. I'll tell you what happened, give you the facts. But the book is more about the ripple effects that it has on all the people left.
Right, exactly.
So I'm more following through. So this happened, this is what happened, this is how it happened, and this is how it ended. And then that's when my book really gets into the description of what it does to the people left over. Also what the justice system does. There's a lot of other things going on that people don't realize, because, you know, that popularity on TV, everyone's jumping into this, oh, it's crime, true crime. And they watch the show and they get into it. Yeah, he killed them and he got put in jail, and they get through that and then it's over.
Right.
But it's not really over.
Oh, no.
It's still going on for so many people.
And
that's missed. That is totally left out in a lot of books. So
that's true. No, exactly. And I did read a couple of them. You were very generous and sent me almost all of them. And I did read a few. And yes, it's the families. It's the families of the victims. It's the family of the perpetrator. And it goes, as I said, it goes on for many, many years, generations, actually. And God, it's just as an empathic person, I'm sitting here and I always, whenever I see a crime and I said, oh my God, what do his parents think? You know, oh my God, what are the families going to do, you know, without a daughter, without their father? You're exactly right. It is a ripple effect. So over the years, I take it this has taken you a while to write the 12 books. When did you get started on the true crime books?
Well, I've been writing for years. And I say that loosely because I'm always working on cases and I have five or six going at a time.
Right.
But I was not published until about 4 years ago. And
oh, really?
Because a publisher approached me, and it took them a while. I did one book for them, and it did well. It's in second printing now.
Great.
And it did really well, and then the floodgates came open, as in I had three publishers looking for work. So I started giving them ones. I had a lot of it already on file that I just had to touch up to give to them. So I have a lot of books out with different publishers in different countries. And but, you know, it's kind of one of those things. I still have 8 or 9 books sitting, and one I'm just finishing up for fall release here in September.
So you're like, this is a so take me through a whole day, I mean, of your writing, because obviously these books just don't come to you like, you know, out of the blue like a an epiphany. So take me through a day.
Well, typically, how I'm getting these is I go about my day and someone will say something to me, or if I'm at a book signing, someone will say, how come you haven't written about this, or have you heard about this case? I mention it, I write it down, and then I look for it later. And I can have quite a few cases. And so what I do is I look for family members. I look for all different people that are still around, involved. And then I send out emails or whatever it is, and I see the response. If a lot of the people that are survivors are interested in a book and they want something to come out or something different than what's been out, then I start pursuing it. So my average day is like today. After I get up, I have because I'm writing this one book, I want to do 3,000 words a day.
Okay.
So
I do that.
Well, you see, but what I've done is, you see, when I'm out and about in my day, I have all these appointments set up for different cases. So I met this serial killer back in October for a month, and then I met his wife, and then I met these family members. And so you have all these things, and you get all this information. And once you've got everything that you need, then you sit down and put it all together. You kind of put it all down there. Once it's all there, I'm at the point now, for instance, with this book where you have all the information. So now I've got to put a running narrative, a voice for it throughout the whole
thing. Okay, I see.
So it sounds like I'm doing a lot, but it's not. It is and it isn't.
It sounds like you're doing a lot.
Well, it is, but I think, you see, once you get to this point, it's almost like I've had 2 years or 3 years of information on this case, and now I'm just all laying it out there.
Right.
And telling you everything I've learned. So it's almost like that. I'm just writing it all out. And thank God for good editors.
Okay. Do you have a wall with a lot of stick-em notes?
No, but I have like three desks with about 5,000 papers all over the place, and I can never find anything.
Oh, okay. Because I envision. I spoke with you a little bit earlier, and I'm married to a retired gay psychiatrist who is writing a mystery novel for the last, I believe, a little over two years. And we share an office, and we have this giant horseshoe desk. I mean, it's giant. But his side of the room has all these little stick-em notes because he has to weave all his characters together and his plot ideas. So he uses stick-em notes. We have a, 3M is and us, we should invest in stock. And my half of the desk is just ridiculous, but it's not. It has nothing to do with writing, but it is interesting. 3,000 words a day, for those who aren't writers, day after day. Maybe you can get 3,000 words one day, but it's very difficult to keep that up and get a book put together and then edited and then of course re-edited and the whole shtick. Okay, so now I'm going to start talking about old authors versus new authors because, as I said, I've been doing this for a long time. Blog Talk Stonewall Live started out with interviewing a lot of authors like Armistead Maupin, Felice Pacano, people who have been writing books, Andrew Hollerhan. I have to be careful because I sometimes say their real names. Because I had them actually as physical guests here in Fort Lauderdale. And before 9/11, I could check them into hotels. We'd get comped hotels at the gay guest houses, and I could check people in under their names that you know. But after 9/11, you had to show ID everywhere. And I found everybody. I found out everybody's real name, and I had no idea they were all writing. So their aunts and uncles didn't know they were gay. Seriously, there are.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a ton of gay writers. The Violet Quill Society. Many of those writers, you see them on the street and you say their names, but that's not who they are. I mean, when it comes down to the driver's license and the airline tickets, they're another person. Boy, have things changed. Not just 9/11, but these younger writers are, they've been out since they've been 12. Seriously,
yeah.
Literally. And they completely don't understand what's, they do understand because they've read about it. Some of them have. But it's very difficult. So have you seen any of that? Have you seen any of those changes when you interview people? Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's not so much, for me it's been different because I've been a gay man in a straight world.
Right.
My interviews were people from Nancy Grace to Marcia Clark to all these detectives and all these different lawyers, and they're all in the straight world. And when I deal with the cops, so for them, I was always just straight. They have no idea.
Right.
And if they did, then I would become the brunt of jokes. It's still a very hetero
yes.
community. Just
very,
you know,
I
so
love it.
You know, so that part of it has always been
sure.
You know, different. So
oh,
I haven't
exactly.
seen that. And it's just been the last year. Like this year, I decided to get into the gay community, so to speak, and see what's going on there with writers.
Uh-huh.
And I was surprised at how many there were.
Oh my God!
I have literally
30 or 40 of them writing me a week, a month, and the change, of course, you know, is self-publishing and the technology. That, you know, anybody is a published writer now in about 20 minutes.
Oh,
you can publish
yeah,
a book.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
Of course, so what do you think about that democratization without any, you know, filter?
Well, you know, it's slow coming. It's never really bothered me too much.
Uh-huh.
From my point of view, because in my history, you know, I'm autistic, and so
right.
coming out with being autistic, colorblind, left-handed, and in the 60s,
right.
they thought I was quiet, introvert, and kind of a bad kid, maybe.
Right.
So I was really slow at all of this stuff. Like I learned to ride a bike at 13. I couldn't tie my shoes. Until
right.
I was in high school. So I'm way behind. So then when I started, I was always told I'd never be in radio. I could never write because of that.
Uh-huh.
So for me, my focus was on what I was doing and what I had to do, not so much about who didn't like me because of what.
Right.
So,
okay, good.
So, because I can say as bad as that hetero side of the policing world has been, it's gotten better. But as bad
right.
as it was over the years, I will say that the gay community has never been supportive of me in any way either.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that in a slam, but what I mean is it tends to be like when you look at all the groups online and you look at all the different awards, it's always about gay writers that write gay characters.
Correct.
It's never about people like me. I'm not involved in either community. I sort of slip through the cracks.
Exactly.
I'll never be up for a Lambda Award. I'll never be up for anything
yeah.
on the gay
right.
side because they're not looking at what I do because I don't do it. I'm not writing about gay style, like gay characters.
Right, right. And I have my own. This is the Nate Klarfeld categorization of gay writing because I've watched it for, you know, 30 years now. And I'm older than I look. Anyway,
you're 31
I'm almost,
now.
I'm going to be 70 in a few weeks. Yeah. Oh my God! It's all right. I'm good with it. Anyway, I think we're in phase two. I mean, phase one was the angst of coming out, and you know, nobody loves me, and da 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 da. Phase two is this. And it's just everything has to be gay, 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 and a very strict, almost canceling society that if you don't believe everything I, you know, in other words, the intersectionality, whether if I'm a gay writer, I have to also be pro-choice, I have to also be a feminist, I also have to be worried about the environment. I also have to not be a smoker. I also have to be a vegan. I mean, this is where we are right now. And that's why people who are just like, I'm a retired dentist who was openly gay in Kansas for 25 years and never had a problem with anybody, with anything. And one of the reasons I think it was is because that's just who I was, you know. I never hit anything. I never, you know, made. But I think that what you were talking about with the gay, the awards and the focus is still that. And I don't want to say narrow because it's kind of broad. But if you don't fit into that pan gay world, you're almost ignored. And that's what you just said. But that's my theory.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll be in phase three in a decade or so.
Yeah.
And you can fit in that. I don't know if you will.
I don't really look at it negatively because, like I said, I've always been dealing. It's been an uphill battle since I can remember, so that's okay.
Right.
I try not to focus on other people and what they do. The same as
exactly
other writers, other radio people. The water's warm. Come on in. There's plenty of room, and some people are very competitive and all that. And I'm just not really. I just want to do what I do well and get better at it. And I'm not so worried about
well.
It. So, you know. Oh, well, yeah, that's nice of you to say.
You do it very well. Go ahead.
I was going to say it'd be great if there was more of an embracing in the community, but there just isn't. So
no, I agree. I agree with you 100%. Yeah. And as I said, I think it is a phase. I honestly believe that the next generation, I don't know where they are yet. I don't know how long it's going to take them I'm quoting one of my favorite writers, David Letick. I don't know if you've ever read David. He's hoping for a day when being gay will only be as exotic as being Swedish.
Well, there you go.
That's one of my favorite lines. And I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for that where we're not such a branding. Like people, I introduce myself and, you know, it's like people, you know, make all these crazy assumptions about me that are terribly wrong most of the time. Okay. So back to my questions. What makes a good writer? AlanRWarren.com. We've been off a billion tangents. Okay. AlanRWarren.com. W-A-R-R-E-N, Alan, A-L-A-N-R, AlanRWarren.com, where you can find links and descriptions of all of his books and also a link to his radio show, House of Mystery radio show. And one of the last questions, I have many more, is what do you think makes a good writer?
Ooh, you know what? If you're not a literary writer, if you're not someone like writing for the quality and the structure of the writing, it's writing from the heart, writing from the gut.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Nothing more.
Right.
Nothing more. It's gotta be true. It's gotta be real. Whatever you write. And it comes from a place that it means something and that's it. That's all that makes a good writer.
Wow. Yeah. I believe that everybody can do it if they aren't afraid of reading and rewriting and rewriting and learning the craft. I think we all have it. We all have some sort of an expression, but we've just put layers and layers of angst over writing. And I know so many people that are just charming and have so many stories to tell. And it's hard to get it. Go ahead.
You know, you compare it to music. You look at someone like, you got like Madonna, who's not necessarily the best singer or the best all that stuff. But there's an overall truth to what she comes across with over the years. And that touched a lot of people. And so that makes a good artist in that way. You wouldn't look at her like she's a great singer. Just like, you know, like me, I'm not like this great writer. I think I just write the truth, and I have a good way of explaining that people connect to, and that's all there is. So you don't have to worry about being this great literary person that, you know, all these great big words, and you have all this great structure and training. That's all good, but it comes down to the heart of the matter, right?
Right. I was going to ask you about if you did have any training in writing.
No.
Not
at all.
Okay. All right.
No.
So, in fact, I did it,
and you can read the books from the very first one that released up till now, and it gets better as I go because I learned to do better And right, I think that's just the process for all of us. You know, it's just the
I
whole
think
life.
That's exactly right.
You know?
That's exactly right. Everybody's got, everybody has a learning curve, and it's interesting to read when you have a favorite author to, you know, go through his book, his or her books. And as they get, on in life, they're easier. Actually, they're easier to read. I mean, one of the books that I, authors that I'm talking about is Patricia Cornwell, who has, you know, who as her books got, as she got older, her books got so much easier to read. They were smoother, and of course hers were not true crime. Hers were all 100% fiction. But yes, you're right. It is a process, and you can take your readers through that process. Okay, so the technology today of books, all of your books are available, of course, on ebooks. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, it is what it is, as our great president says.
Oh, no. Okay, go ahead.
No.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I think it's fine. It gives a lot of people a lot of opportunities to get their work out there. And it's fine being on a book. The bad thing is, you know, we don't get near as much money out of it for our work. So,
right.
You know, that's what comes with it. You know,
but then again, neither musicians are in the same boat that the authors are. I mean, they're getting the same, raw deal with Spotify and Pandora and all the other stuff. But, you know, I was one of those bibliophiles. I talked about, and my listeners all know about my life with the Stonewall Library down here in Fort Lauderdale. I love books. I love the smell and the physical touching and the licking the page and turning it. But you know, I just went on about, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, maybe longer. My husband and I were going on a long trip, and we were to the Baltics and Russia. And I started packing my books, and he looked at me and he says, "No, we're overweight. It's not worth it. Get a Kindle and put it all on Kindle." I said, "No, I don't want that thing." And I now it's with me. My Kindle is literally with me more than my cell phone. So I lost, or it lost.
Well, I've moved into audiobooks now because I had cataract surgery on both eyes, and so now I'm listening all the time. I listen. Almost 90% of the books now are audio for me.
Right. Yeah. I started during the coronavirus. I went to audiobooks so I can walk around the house. And now you don't have to have a separate thing. Kindle will play your audiobook. There's a new one. I've discussed a new one that does not only, it hooks up to your Wi-Fi and you can play. And I just, you know, I love it. I do about a book a week, and it's great on top of my other readings. So what's on your nightstand? What are you reading? What are on your queue for audiobooks right now? What are you reading? I'm interested.
Well, actually, I go to things like Dr. Michael Shermer. I do sometimes. Right now, too, I just listened to True Crime Addict, and that was Jeff Renner.
Oh, yeah.
James Renner, who was really, really good. I really like his writing.
Good.
But I'm mainly doing, novella and all this things about nothing to do with what I write. I do that because I'm writing, and I don't want to read someone else's that'll influence me. So I'm sticking to things like they talk about the weird conspiracy theories in the world and all the weird stuff going on. You know, it's more that sort of thing, which is really and religion. The different things and so I'm listening to a lot of stuff that's off the mainstream at the moment.
It's kind of like going to the gym. It's refreshing, to get away from it. This has been a great interview. You know, we're almost done, like 30 seconds left. So I know. See, I told you it'd be the fastest 30 minutes of your life. What do you have to say at the end of this interview to our listeners?
Hi. I'm glad I'm on your show. That was great. It's good to touch base. And I you know, if they like to get into true crime, by all means, look me up.
AlanRWarren.com.
Thank you. That's
okay.
It. Yeah.
That's it. Okay. Well, good night, all. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Good night, all. Thanks.